Welcome to Night Vision Radio with your host, Renee Barnett. Real people, real stories firsthand. Life as we know it, seen through different eyes. From conversations with those who claim up close and personal experiences with the unknown.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Night Vision Radio. We've got a great show planned for tonight, an exciting show all about the current events of the day. But before I introduce my guest, who I'm really excited to chat with about these things, I'd like to make a brief announcement, just letting you know that we do have two spaces available on the UK tour, the Bloodline Mystery Tour to the UK, where we will be traveling the Grail Lands from Glastonbury all the way up to Roslyn, Scotland, and meeting us along the way, and I'm not going to tell you exactly where that's going to happen for security reasons, is Nicholas Haywood, who you saw in the film Bloodline as a representative of the Priory of Zion. And he says he's going to share some information with us. And also, you know, we are told that the Priory is going to be releasing new information. We don't know. They seem to follow their own agenda. I have no way of predicting, you know, what that information might be, or that it'll even actually be ever made public. But I am assured that we will get some information exclusively on this tour, and it should prove to be interesting. Nick Haywood's been a guest on this show a couple of times, and he is always riveting. But as is my guest tonight, and introducing my guest tonight, he is the host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, and he's co-host of New World Next Week at CorbettReport.com. My guest is James Evan Pilato. Welcome, James.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Wow, and I'm still marveling over this wonderful connection. It sounds like you're sitting right next to me in the studio. We're going to have to use this kind of a connection more often, but I think it also has something to do with your condenser mic on that end.
I think so.
Yeah,
think.
Incredible. You sound better than I do, and I don't appreciate that one bit. But anyway, James, you know, I contacted you. I've been, you know, as everyone else has, you know, looking at the news reports, looking, you know, at all the reports on the internet, talking to friends, looking out into the streets and seeing what's going on with this big, big story of the death of Osama bin Laden. And there's so many conspiracy theories swirling around this. You know, maybe some of them are he's been dead for 10 years, and we've known that the whole time, to he was a Patton Oswald, to, you know, he was complicit with the Bushes in 9/11. And, oh, my goodness, I mean, you know, just for regular people, how does one sort through all this?
That's the huge, and that's, I think, something that an event of this sort of seeming arguments with friends and family that I find, you know, myself in, and arguments is putting it strongly, but this kind of issue brings up these divisions with folks, and I think the basic that I would put it for people that if I can get you the intelligence agencies and they let his family fly out after 9/11, and those things are publicly available and part of the record.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I remember, you know, there was no one in the air on 9/11 except for the bin Laden family.
So if you can't get folks to take on even that amount of stuff, how on earth are you going to hit them with, well, I actually think a lot of this is going on because we're in the middle of occult holidays where we see our inbred eugenics obsessed elite throwing their royal rituals, and we see the exhumation of the Pope, and all of these things are going on right around the same time, and it can't be any kind of accident.
Well, what about the fact that, you know, this occurred right after, you know, Egypt and Mubarak left and Gaddafi's all but gone, or at least in my estimation, from Libya. And then we have Yemeni and Syria. All these things are going on. You know, then we have suddenly they're trotting out bin Laden. And I'm not saying that I agree that he was already dead, or I'm saying I am the every person. I don't know what to think, you know, and I'm hoping, you know, that someone can straighten me out. I do know that it seems to be a proven fact that the bin Ladens were in the skies over the United States, the only people allowed to fly when every other plane had been grounded. You know, that's certainly, you know, very telling of something.
So let me see if I can try and put this together in any
Please.
Kind of, you know, any way that kind of makes sense. And so much of this, you know, I'll preface all this with saying that it's like, you know, I'm just one guy that does radio who was, you know, activated by the events of 9/11 to do more research into what's really going on in the world. So I'm still, you know, every day kind of find myself humbled to be sort of in the small way a part of, you know, a sort of independent, commercial, free, you know, non-corporate alternative media online, and some of the folks I'm associated with. And, you know, as you start to build an audience, you know, get humbled by it. It's like, oh my God, there's, you know, there's people that are, you know, finding value in this work. But I preface all this to say that, you know, so much of this is my own education too. I don't ever want to feel like I'm out there telling people exactly, you know, what's going down, because I have the, you know, monopoly on facts. But the weekly video series that you referred to in the beginning is called NewWorldNextWeek.com, and I do it with James Corbett, who does a fantastic weekly podcast and tons of interviews and videos. And just probably in the last 36 or 48 hours or so, he's published probably 3 or 4 interviews with authors and researchers. He's been on Russia Today, and he was on the Alex Jones Show yesterday. So we do a weekly video series, and in keeping with sort of the YouTube limits of 15 minutes, we keep the show to a 15-minute format, and each week we generally go over 3 kind of main stories and do it in a way that it's hopefully accessible to all kinds of folks. You know, it's literally the show that I can, you know, email to my parents and they'll watch it, because it's, you know, a bite-sized bit.
Mm-hmm.
On April 7th, our April 7th episode, the third and final story that we covered on that episode was the rise in chatter talking about Osama bin Laden. And we cited an article called Bin Laden Sets Alarm Bells Ringing. And we noted it just as possibly important because the guy who wrote the article was also one talking about Osama bin Laden in the months leading up to 9/11. So we noted it as, hey, you know, something may be going on here. So flash forward to, you know, the end of April, and you recall the announcement of Robert Gates retiring, the Secretary of Defense.
Yep.
And at that same moment, too, they also announced they were going to move, you know, the head of the intelligence agency to the head of the Pentagon and vice versa, as if that were no big thing, you know, no big deal. We're just going to swap these guys that are supposed to be two, you know, autonomous agencies doing two completely different things, but they're just all interchangeable. And when they're done there, you know, they'll go to some sweet gig at, you know, military contractor, but I digress.
Or Goldman Sachs. Yeah.
Or Goldman Sachs. Yeah. Depends on, you know, which way they roll.
Yeah.
But Robert Gates goes back to what was called Operation Cyclone under President Carter in the late 70s. And you may recall Carter's national security advisor was Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Mm-hmm.
And even the public story, the official kind of version, even accepts the fact that we funded and trained the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets. It came out furthermore when Brzezinski, and of course, elites and insiders do like to, you know, kind of tip their hand, and perhaps they are giving clues. And he essentially said in La Nouvelle Observatoire, I believe, that Operation Cyclone was about funding and training the Mujahideen as a way to draw in the Soviets to invade Afghanistan. So it was, you know, the cart before the horse, essentially.
Oh, my gosh. It's like reverse psychology or something.
Exactly. So
that's silly.
To try and give the Soviets their Vietnam. And Brzezinski is a guy who's written books called The Grand Chessboard and Between Two Eras. And his basic philosophy seems to be, we like to play all these smaller Middle Eastern countries off of each other because ultimately it all leads to war with Russia and China. So keep that in your mind.
Okay. I'm making a mental note.
I am too. So you had Robert Gates, actually, back in the day, as a CIA guy, he was involved in Operation Cyclone, the funding and training of the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets. The Mujahideen would essentially become Al-Qaeda, which the name even comes from the database, meaning the database of Mujahideen fighters that are on the intelligence payroll.
Oh, gosh.
So we flash forward now to the end of April of 2011, and we see Robert Gates retire out of the blue, which we also want to bring attention to. I always found it, you know, glaringly obvious. And this was another thing that you find it frustrating when you're trying to share this information with folks who seem to kind of have willful denial and they do not want to get into it. They know in their gut something's wrong, but
right,
they, for whatever reason, can't get into it. And in a way, hell, I can't blame them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's scary as hell.
So you have Robert Gates announce his retirement, and then a few days later, we see the announcement of the death of bin Laden. That, to me, it really struck me as Robert Gates has played his role. He has fulfilled his role from the late 70s to this day, and that's why he retired, and now, you know, it was, you know, good job or mission accomplished, if you like, which, of course, May Day was the 8th anniversary of Bush's mission accomplished speech aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln. So we have all of those other holidays and things that kind of tie in. But you basically can draw the connection between this long kind of story, in a way, that has Brzezinski and Gates and others funding Mujahideen and Osama bin Laden. Flash forward to this day, Gates retires, his job is done. And for whatever reason, and this is something that James Corbett, I think, can, you know, illustrate and explain more eloquently than I can, but they're retiring this asset, this card, the boogeyman of Osama bin Laden, or Emmanuel Goldstein, if you like, has been paraded around now for quite some time, but to diminishing effect. And we're now, you know, of course, 2 years into the Obama-Saya reign, and that the Osama terror doesn't really work. Did I bumble their names up, actually?
Well, no, you okay. Didn't. But I've been living in fear all day that I was going to. So I hope you do before I do.
But you know, but isn't that also something interesting to bring out, that those two names are so very close?
It's very odd.
I mean, let me draw in one more.
Oh connection. My gosh!
And I'll shut up for a second. You have Brzezinski, as I said, kind of funding and training Osama bin Laden for his role as the Emmanuel Goldstein of terror in the late 20th century and early 21st. You also have Brzezinski funding and training a young guy from Columbia University, and he is now the foreign policy advisor to that man commonly referred to as Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically have Brzezinski pulling the strings. Now, that's not to say, I generally myself, I don't really subscribe to the kind of unified field conspiracy theory that it's all tightly controlled and every single bit is all meant to be by the tippy top of a pyramid. Unfortunately, I tend to think of them more as gangster families, multi-generational, you know, serial killers, that sometimes, as gangsters do, they kind of battle over turf and have to bump each other off, but they all realize that as long as they play the game, they're essentially going to win. The house will win.
Yeah. You know, it, like you said, you know, it can't all be completely controlled, all of it, and everything is tied in, and it's tied into not only, you know, the banking thing, but it's tied into occult holidays, and it's tied into this, that, and the other. I mean, I get how it appears to be, especially, you know, in light of some of the research that I've done, especially the occult stuff. It's really mm-hmm. bizarre. But what I don't get is, okay, let's say, and I'm not saying I'm taking a position on this either way, but, you know, politically. But let's say, okay, you know, George Bush, you know, we see that the family, longstanding oil money, you know, we see what those connections are and everything. All right, but then how is it that, you know, someone like Barack Obama, who seems to be, you know, coming out of left field, literally left field, you know, without those deep Washington connections, without those deep family connections, I mean, how is it that he's all entwined in all the conspiracies? I mean, how is it that every person that comes through Washington is, you know, they're all crooks and they're all tied in and they're all privy to these games and they're all playing? Is there something that when they're all, you know, in college or something, and maybe they're joining the Skull and Bone Society or something, and they're all told all the secret stuff, and it's like they all agree at some point, oh, we're going to play this game, we're going to go along with it, and we're going to pretend like we're fighting with each other. We're going to pretend like we're Democrats and Republicans fighting each other, but really we're all playing this game. I mean, how can that really be?
I think that at some point, yeah, they would have to have some sort of tacit, you know, approval of, yeah, I'm going to go along with this. But as you were saying, you know, the kind of the difference between Bush and Obama, you know, Bush, in a way, you know, America has known for, you know, many, many years. We saw him grow up and his daddy was president and all types of other things. And then you have Obama, who seemingly, you know, comes from nowhere, was a freshman, you know, senator from Illinois.
Mm.
But his background, for whatever reason, has been more shrouded in mystery, essentially. And I think it's just the difference between the Bush crime family and their ways are, as we saw in his sort of presidential style, are more open and sort of known and cowboyish and swaggering and oil and big and Texas. And that's all a fake show because, of course, they're carpetbaggers from Kennebunkport, Maine. But they're just, I think, different. Again, they're just some different middle management families within the gangster scheme. So then you also have someone like Bill Clinton, who wasn't exactly, you know, a super well-known guy either.
Yeah, he was a poor kid from Arkansas, from single mom and all that, who, you know, got scholarships and became a Rhodes Scholar, et cetera, et cetera. And so, but how, yeah, how do these people from these disparate backgrounds all come to some point where they say, okay, I'm in, I'm going to play along, and everybody's going to be fooled because they're going to think I'm on this side, but I'm really, there's really only one side here.
Mm-hmm. I think there's probably, you know, multiple levels of delusion and self-deluding that probably goes on with a lot of these folks that we're talking about, that again, they're kind of the front people. We're talking about a lot of just the actors on the stage that, you know, we kind of follow around and think are the thing. I think a lot of them on multiple levels are probably, you know, blackmailable, and there are, you know, horrible things about them that could come out and destroy their family and all sorts of things, whether that's, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll and you name it. Because we find with a lot of our so-called leaders that, you know, they get busted for odd, you know, sex things. And we've seen, I don't know if you're familiar with what's referred to as the Franklin scandal.
No.
That was essentially the Omaha story about the Boys Town there being used as a child abuse ring that had connections to Washington, D.C. You may recall the Washington Times front page, I forget exactly the date on it, but, you know, late 80s under, you know, Bush 1, that it was homosexual prostitution inquiry snares VPs within Reagan-Bush White House. that they were caught giving late night tours to boys within the White House.
Okay, are we talking homosexual or are we talking pedophilia?
I think in a way we're talking about all of it. Mm-hmm. So whatever your gig is, they'll get you with blackmail material, and then generally you'll go along and play the game, perhaps not realizing maybe how far it goes. You know, if we talk about, you know, sort of Freemasonry, that, you know, you're always taught to believe that, oh, you're at the highest level. But of course, there are levels up above you.
That's right. That's right. And speaking of Freemasons, in the chat room, somebody brought up the idea that, you know, the common link between all these people are that they're all Masons. Is that a possibility?
I'm sure that's quite probable and possible as well. But again, I think just as we're talking, I don't think there's necessarily going to be the constant through line of it being Freemasonry, just as I don't think you'll see a constant through line of, you know, the Jews all run it crowd or the Catholics all run it crowd. My belief is that they're basically warring factions.
Yeah. I mean, so tell me, what is your best guess at what's going on with this Osama bin Laden thing? Was he already dead? Did we do a strike and you know, a Navy SEAL strike and get him this week on May 1st? What do you think? What's your best guess?
Well, it's funny. I'm not sure, because every time I look at the news, they keep changing the story.
The story changes. That's true.
You know, and I believe I've heard, you know, I think military folks who, of course, believe all of the official story of all of it, that, you know, maybe the military and the administration kind of screwed up by getting out and letting out too much information in the beginning. And then now having to deal with all of it and trying to adjust. So that's even, again, the sort of official story is, oh, well, it looks like they maybe kind of screwed up the media release of it. And now, of course, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, now you have to kind of deal with it.
Well,
they said, well, we're going to release photos and there'll be, you know, no doubt that, you know, that Osama, you know, is dead.
Okay.
Which is exactly what they said when they were blaming him for 9/11, but they never offered any evidence, even though you remember the Taliban said, if you show us evidence, we'll hand over bin Laden to you. And Bush said, no. We want to bomb you. That's why our aircraft carriers had already been amassing around Afghanistan in the months and weeks leading up to 9/11.
Right. But, you know, about this photograph evidence, you know, that they say maybe they're going to show it, maybe they're not going to show it. I guess it's now they're not. I'm not sure. But
I think the latest.
Any photo that I would see, I would still not know. I would still not. I mean, you can Photoshop anything.
That's true.
You know, how is a photograph proof anything?
I think if they were able to show us a convincing photograph, and that, again, is a recurring theme with the bin Laden narrative over the last 10 years. Generally, most of the audio and video has all been kind of suspect. And I'm not saying that every single thing has been completely faked, but a large amount of it has been debunked as fake or redone or changed up.
Mm. You're talking about the video from the strike that they've been showing.
Well, no, and I'm also then just talking about all the other videos that have supposedly come out of Osama bin Laden over the years.
Over the years, I see.
Videos come out. Of course, they always somehow come out right before there's an election or something to scare the populace with the boogeyman again.
Yeah. Yeah, so we don't notice what's going on behind the curtain.
I feel like, and again, to tie in the fact that there's, you know, this whole weekend has been surrounded by death rituals with Beltane and Walpurgis and May Day and all of that.
Yeah.
That,
and
you know,
the royal wedding.
Death of Gaddafi's family.
Yeah.
You know, and we have that as well. So now everybody said, now we have to brace for retaliation from anywhere around the world because, you know, we're killing world, you know, bad guys, and their family members and their followers are going to attack us. But I just feel like if they had convincing evidence, we wouldn't hear the end of it. They would be shouting it from the rooftops and shoving it down our throats. My belief is they don't have anything convincing. My belief is that Osama bin Laden has been dead for quite some time.
But why would they? Oh, I see. You're saying because they need him to be the boogeyman.
They have needed him to be the boogeyman. And even our own, you know, U.S. military guys have been on the record saying they believe bin Laden was killed in the Tora Bora region in the fall of 2001, in the very beginning stages of the Afghan war. But then you also have Benazir Bhutto, before she was, of course, assassinated herself, say that, you know, bin Laden was assassinated. You've had Musharraf of Pakistan essentially say the same thing. You've had different world leaders, you know, at different times say, I think he's dead. I believe he's dead. I think he died of kidney failure because he was, of course, you know, needed dialysis.
Right.
I think ultimately, and again, we can kind of make the comparison, if you will. Just as I don't think George Bush blew up the World Trade Center, right. I don't think he was that involved in it. That's why I think, you know,
who was?
hold that thought. I think, yeah, just as I, you know, that makes a nice slogan to say, you know, oh, Bush knew, you know, Bush knocked down the towers. I don't think it's quite that simple. I think it's also to say, you know, say I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, Obama's in on it and he knows that this is a fake, you know, that this is a put up.
I see.
I think there are a lot of levels, you know, just as, you know, what if, think about Ronald Reagan in a way. That's just like, just get on camera, Ronnie, read cue cards, and, you know, we'll take care of the rest.
Yeah.
I think our leaders, again, I don't ascribe that much, you know, power and control. Because even as we're talking about the story changing constantly, do you remember the photo that came out with the death of bin Laden? Of all our criminal cabinet members sitting around as if they're watching the live feed of this assassination go down.
Yeah.
They come and change the story and go, oh, no, they were not watching that in real time. They were watching some footage of the raid.
All right.
So that part of the story changed. So, again, just I don't know if you ever heard the story that, you know, Bush made some reference to, you know, watching live video of the first plane hit the tower on 9/11. And then speculating that he had some, you know, secret line that he was watching it. While I don't doubt, you know, of course that can be possible. We can have that kind of transmission.
Mm.
I just don't think they're that keyed in on it.
Yeah.
I think, again, they're figures. They're the shadows cast on the wall of the cave, if you will.
I tell you, that video of him reading those children that morning and being interrupted, to me, that was a genuine dumbstruck look, with the emphasis on dumb. You know,
well,
but
he wasn't rushed out of there, too, as you noticed.
Oh, no, it was
standard operating procedure to rush the president out. And they make up the story that, you know, oh, well, we didn't want to scare the kids, as if the only way to leave the room would be run and scream. Oh, my
exactly.
God.
Exactly.
Stood up and said, kids, I'm really sorry, but I've got grown-up stuff to do because
exactly.
I'm the president.
I've got to go out and work for the country.
Yeah.
Exactly. I thought that very same thing. I thought, oh, my God, he sat there for what seemed like an interminable amount of time.
So I think that's because they knew he wasn't in danger. And I guess we are kind of leading back to the events of 9/11 as we're kind of talking about the day of. I don't know. I mean, where
well,
do
not
you
only was he, you know,
conversation?
Was it a matter of him being in danger or not? But also, it's like, don't you move quickly and swiftly as possible? You know, he's the president of the United States, so he's going to sit there and finish this story. When he needs to be on the phone, you know, with the Pentagon, with whoever.
Uh-huh.
Jim Mars, and
that's the thing, too, is because who was already on the phone and who already was in the command center? Then that would be Cheney and the gang.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they were, of course, involved in military war games and drills of simulating commercial jets being hijacked and crashed into government buildings, and it somehow miraculously happened to turn into a live event.
Yeah. Ugh.
Let me interrupt for a second.
Oh, please.
Jim Mars had mentioned, he wrote a book about it too, that day, one of the reasons Bush didn't react to it is because they were doing an exercise where jets were scrambled, a simulation of such that type of tragedy. And that's why he thought it was a test. That's one of the reasons why they didn't scramble so fast. I mean, that's one of the things.
I think Jim's going to be on next week, by the way. So yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites.
I'm hope so. I'm waiting for him to confirm, but I think he will. If not the next week, a couple weeks after that.
It
so yeah,
seems
I love
like
his stuff.
Such a that as what I'm saying. I don't really pay any attention to the political affiliation because, as we're saying, you know that it's sort of a WWF. You know, kind of staged event. So when you see, you know, maybe natural disasters and things happen and you see George Bush and Bill Clinton saying, just send us your cash, and you see them hanging out on boats and you see Poppy Bush patting Billy on the back saying, he's like a son to me, that we see these kind of the transition between at least the last several administrations in this country. And gosh, if, you know, we're not coming close to some sort of monarchy there, but with, you know, Bush to Clinton to Bush and on and on. But you had, in a way, Bill Clinton being smeared with the Monica Lewinsky scandal, and it really just kind of decimated the whatever, you know, what aura of respect the office may have had left. It pretty much just destroyed it and smashed it and got rid of it, thereby kind of setting the stage, in a way, for to bring in what is, you know, pretty much referred to as a dummy who comes in and kind of screws everything up, and he's a big goofball. And we, you know, had tons of books and t-shirts making fun of, you know, the dumb things he would say. And
And a lot of us pretended like we were from Canada when we went abroad. I know I did.
And then when you had 9/11 happen, and, you know, just as you also had Oklahoma City happen, you know, just, you know, a while into Bill Clinton's administration, we had 9/11 happen just a short while into Bush's administration, that then they really begin to set into motion because they need, you know, what was referred to in the Project for a New American Century, the paper that said, gosh, you know, America's losing its place in the, you know, geostrategic, you know, chessboard. We're going to need to reassert our dominance and da-da-da-da-da, but it's all going to be really hard unless there's a new Pearl Harbor. And then, lo and behold, of course, they had one on 9/11, the new Pearl Harbor, that they were then able with the quickness to blast out the Patriot Act, which, you know, was sitting on a shelf waiting to be passed. It's not like they wrote, you know, 30,000-page bill in just a couple of days. It had been waiting, you know, waiting in the wings, just as I'll quickly throw out that, you know, several folks have gone on the record to say that there's essentially an Patriot Act, that is to say, an Internet Patriot Act, that is just awaiting some type of, you know, 9/11, some sort of catastrophic online event that I've kind of jokingly referred to as, you know, it'll punch you in your Facebook. Something that'll take out all the social networking sites and somebody, you know, if I can't play World of Warcraft and I can't get on Facebook and I can't do, you know, check TMZ for, you know, all the other that people are going to wig.
Yeah.
And tie in, you know, knocking out ATMs or any kind of sort of, you know, electronic 9/11 event. And that could be done through an EMP. It could also be done by, of course, the sun, which is also the driver of many of the things that we see in the world.
Oh, yeah. You know, even that's tied into everything. Solar flares.
That might already have happened. I don't know if everybody's aware about what happened with PlayStation Network. It was hacked into.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's going to be a multi-million-dollar suit, I think.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Millions of people's identities were taken from the PlayStation.
Yeah.
So I guess what I was basically saying is that you see this kind of seamless handoff. So Bush was able to get the Homeland Security police state rolling.
Right.
And then just as they're about to hand it off, you know, from one team to another, because, of course, every 4 or 8 years you can throw the bums out. And I like this other side now. Now, that's not to, you know, take anything away from, you know, the Obama campaign, which is the, you know, most amazing, you know, Madison Avenue advertising psychological operation this country has perhaps ever seen, I would say. But just as Bush was on his way out, remember, we had this financial crisis and we had Obama essentially already as the anointed one. Once Hillary was not able to make it, even with references to, well, something could happen. You know, RFK got shot in June.
Yeah.
But, you know, she stepped aside and you had Obama basically as then the anointed one already going to the Senate and already going to the House and already going to folks saying, hey, you know, I'm going to be the guy. Let's make sure we pass this bailout bill. That was the whole thing going on during the election. This another kind of seamless handoff that they both colluded in the financial bailout. So now you have Obama, who after the dummy Bush, you know, one, anybody's going to look pretty good after that. But two, you know, he's kind of handsome and kind of cool seeming and is, you know, a breath of fresh air. He's able to now continue with left cover. That is the support, you know, tacit or otherwise, from all the sort of well-meaning left folks who now love all the things that are still going on, just as now you see the Bush supporters going, hey, Obama's being a warmonger and he's, you know, curtailing civil rights, as if it all started, you know, in January 2009. Because, again, we have this sort of collective amnesia as everybody compacts into their little team. You know, and I root for the guys with a D and I root for the guys with an R. One side's activated and the other side kind of goes to sleep. You now have the well-meaning left going along with everything you see, cheering along. Oh, yeah, I think we should have gone into Libya, and just loving it because it's their guy. And now with the supposed death of bin Laden, they can say, see, now that's how you, you know, fight a war on terror. You know, Bush could take some lessons from Obama. He knows how to get things done. You see this handoff, and now Obama, with left cover, is able to continue this sort of, you know, unitary executive agenda that we saw under Bush, because now Obama still has all those, you know, presidential decision directives, and now, you know, add in the internet kill switch, and all of those things all still stay. So I hope for folks who would maybe ask the question for a second that, okay, we got bin Laden, so that's for real mission accomplished, right? That means we get to bring our boys and girls home, and we can get out of those countries, and we can, you know, disband Homeland Security, we can stop molesting people at the airports, and we're done, right? And, you know, let's have sailors, you know, kissing girls and dipping them back in the street, like, yay, we're done. Let's maybe take care of our crumbling infrastructure here. But no, it's not gonna. It's gonna continue to ratchet up, as we already see. You know, administration mulls raising terror alert. That's news from just a little bit ago.
Yeah.
It's not gonna go away. It's gonna continue to kind of ratchet up until when or what, you know, I would only have to speculate. The optimist in me likes to kind of think that, you know, like Princess Leia says, you know, Darth Vader, the tighter you grip your fists, you know, the more we're going to slip through your fingers. I'd like to think that the moment that maybe elites really go for, you know, an overdrive kind of push of whether it's austerity or police state measures or some sort of geoengineering, you know, bio cull or what have you, that the moment they go for it, that it will fail, because hopefully, again, the optimist in me would like to look around at humans, our brothers and sisters all around the world, who all just want to live and love and grow and learn things and enjoy this life while we can.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that the moment they went for it, the whole collective kind of will of humanity would, in a way, rise up and not necessarily have a revolution, but that there would be the revelation. As I think, you know, Anthony Hilder always said, you know, we need to incite a revelation, not a revolution. We need to incite the, like, boom, you know, the big light bulb going off over people's heads, you know, and is doing in my own little radio show and things, you know, does that help in some small way? I guess I'd like to think that it does. I don't think I go to bed every night going, yeah, you know, I'm great because I'm trying to spread this kind of information. As you know, I think I said, I find it educational and informative for me. And pre 9/11, I think I played around on the internet like anybody and would, you know, play, you know, arcade games that you could play online, or I also enjoyed kind of editing Wikipedia and not maliciously, but I enjoyed adding information to kind of flesh out this online encyclopedia. But it was post 9/11 and it was starting the website that mm-hmm. really for me was like, this is what I'd been looking for. This for me is what I had been, you know, wanting the web and all of this new technology to be. So basically, as long as the satellites can stay in the sky, hopefully we can continue to converse and share information. And I'd like to think that, again, it won't hopefully be so precipitous and so obvious that there will be martial law in the streets tomorrow and the stormtroopers will be marching down the street. Unfortunately, my fear is that, again, you know, something like Katrina was the, I think, practice run folks to kind of get a glimpse at what breakdown may look like.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, what's going to happen is, you know, civil servants and cops and all these people, man, they're going to go check on their mom. And
they're going to head for the hills. Yeah.
You probably do the same thing, too. And
of
I probably
course.
Do, too. I worry that it's not necessarily going to be stormtroopers cracking down, or that there's the secret list. And because we do shows like this, we're on the list. And again, I doubt that list, you know, exists. No, not really. But ultimately, I feel like once, or when and if they want to completely pull the rug out from under us, that we're going to be left amongst ourselves. And again, the optimist in me would like to think that as our human brothers and sisters, that we could all, you know, look at each other and go, gee, gosh, you know, like Rodney King said, can't we all just get along?
Yeah, can't we all just get along and clean up this mess?
And clean up this mess, and we don't need to fight and loot and steal and rob and kill each other, because there's more than enough stuff for everybody to go around. Like, we can all share, and if we maybe, you know, let's convert that golf course maybe into a big farm. Hey, let's take over that shopping mall that all the stores are out of business anyway, and let's take that over. I hope, and I guess somewhat selfishly, I hope that the Pacific Northwest is kind of well positioned to hopefully weather what may or may not be coming, that there is kind of a large, you know, either survivalist or prepper or just almost a, you know, sovereignty movement with regards to, you know, personal human rights and also the food issue, which is the overarching thing to everything pretty much.
Yeah. Now, what do we do as just as regular citizens? I mean, what can we do as individuals? I mean, all we seem to be able to do is go to the polls and vote, but we're only given choices that have been apparently manipulated, from what I'm hearing you say and others say. I mean, how do we sort it out, and how do we implement change?
You know, I think for me, and again, I can't speak for everyone, just as I can't get mad at folks who don't have the time to look at my website and see this information that I'm trying to get to you, because they're probably working two jobs because the currency has been devalued, and they also, you know, probably have kids and all of those things. That myself, you know, for whatever reason, through, you know, just learning from things as I grew up, and I'm originally from a small town in West Virginia. I grew up in a Southern Baptist church.
So did I.
Say that again.
I did too, as well. I grew up in southeastern Oklahoma, in the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of grew up with a bit of the fire and brimstone, revelations, rapture, end times, Armageddon stuff kind of gives me, you know, at least a little bit more of a keener eye to watch the news, because, you know, I mean, because so many folks actually don't have a background, because, you know, religion, for better or worse, has been slowly and systematically kind of declining.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to look at world events and go, huh, so this is going to mean a lot for, you know, Bible prophecy believing folks, because they're, you know, XYZ is supposed to happen. And when we start to see these events, people can point and say, oh, they're, you know, these things are going to happen. But as a little kid, I even kind of felt like in the church, it was like, well, okay, if all this stuff is meant to be and it's all God's will, then one, it makes you think, well, what difference does anything make what I try and do? And and the other thing would be, if you guys believe this is all meant to be, you're going to actively work to make it happen. So
that's
it's
right.
Going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Prophecies.
If we think it's all going to go down in Israel, it's all going to go down in Israel. And when we see the, you know, the Dome of the Rock blow up, you know that it's on, basically.
Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's so, so st- strange.
Well, and actually, you asked me, and I don't want to disregard that, because we can spend so much time talking about the bad. You were asking, you know, what do we do? And as I kind of said, you know, I may be lucky in a way, because I guess I've kind of crafted my life in a way to have a somewhat simple existence. Now, I enjoy living in a city because I like to be able to go see, you know, movies and rock bands and those kind of things that a city can afford you. Because I, you know, I'm a media guy. What's my media? Media Monarchy is the name of the website. So I enjoy the city angles of it, but I don't have any debt. I don't own any cars. My girlfriend and I have been together for 10 years, and we don't have any kids and we don't have any pets. And avoiding, in a way for me, some of those things has been a way to really just kind of keep costs down, quite simply.
Well, that sounds sad, though. I mean, gosh, I don't have any kids and no pets. And
I'd love to have a cat again. I'll say that.
Cats don't cost much. You know, they don't eat much.
I wish I had a cat, you know, like on my lap as we're having this.
I thought maybe you were going to say you didn't have any kids or pets because you wanted to be able to make a run for the hills or something when the big one comes down.
I don't think it's been that, but again, those decisions have been kind of my own. And that's also not to say that I'll never have kids or I'll never have a car or I'll never have, you know, pets. But at this point in my life, and I'm 33.
Oh, you're a baby. Yeah. You still
so
got
at this point in my life, you know, I haven't yet. For me, growing up in a small town, I got turned on to, you know, thanks to my brother, I got turned on to basically, you know, punk rock and underground music. And it blew my mind. And from that time, turned me on to alternative viewpoints in multiple areas.
Mm.
At the time of 9/11, I was the music director at my college community radio station. Back in the Eastern Panhandle, West Virginia, right on the border of Maryland, about an hour away from D.C., and we were a 950-watt non-commercial community radio station, and I was essentially the guts and the brains and the voice behind the operation. I picked a lot of the music for our, you know, regular and heavy rotation, and I contacted the labels, and I got to interview bands sometimes and go to shows for free and all that kind of fun stuff. So I've always kind of been the media guy. I've been the guy that my friends would, you know, or at least pre-internet era, would call me up to be like, who's the guy that's in the movie that's, you know, I can answer like those kind of media questions, trivia questions, and just pop culture things that for whatever reason I've got lodged away in my head. I probably spent too much time in record stores and bookstores and video stores growing up just looking at the packages. And looking at the text and looking at the, you know, who produced what and who played on that and what studio is putting it out. That was also because, and again, to go back to the church week.
Oh, yeah. Wednesday night prayer meeting. We weren't supposed to dance at all.
Our church, again, fortunately, wasn't that strict, and it wasn't any, you know, dress codes and you know, speaking in tongues or anything. And again, I'm not trying to talk bad about any other kind of, you know, religion or group, but I was basically kept away from media at a young age. So again, unfortunately, sorry, Mom, the thing you tried to keep me away from is the thing that I then became most involved in. And I was, you know, I did music and sound design for a lot of theatrical productions back east and played in a band and DJed and was always involved in kind of creative media. When 9/11 happened, basically behind the scenes, I started to study not only 9/11, but sort of the related history and JFK and secret societies and all of those sort of conspiracy theories. You know, that term that's used to basically in debate. It's used, you know, with derision to try and insult. It's used, you know, as a pejorative. But I started to look into all of
this. Oh, James, I'm sorry. It went so fast. I hear the music coming. And before we cut it off, I want to give out your website again. That's mediamonarchy.com. And you can also see them on the corporatereport.com. Mm-hmm. James Evan Pilato, thank you so much for being my guest tonight. I hope you'll agree to come back because there's so much to talk about.
Absolutely. Thank you for letting me go on so long.
Thanks so much. Good night, everybody.